everyone, and welcome back to Casual Climbers, the podcast by and for beginning hikers, and those who may not quite be physically ready to tackle the Appalachian Trail. I'm your host, Donna Padrick, and alongside me is my husband and adventure buddy, Roy.
Good morning, Donna.
Good morning.
So in this podcast, we provide you with information, tips, and tricks on how to get into hiking in the Blue Ridge area. We will cover some of the hundreds of trails in the various parks and areas of the region, and hopefully entertain you a little bit along the way. We're two middle-aged, not-in-the-best-shape hikers.
Definitely not-in-the-best-shape hikers.
Who love the outdoors and want to share all of our experiences with you. In this week's podcast, we discuss a relatively easy but historically significant hike in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, Metcalf Bottoms Trail. We'll also have a big fun fact segment where we dive into the life of the Walker sisters, five spinster sisters who lived in the area. And we also review a new app that I've been using lately called Guide Along. So what do you say, Donna? Let's get into it.
Let's go.
So here's Metcalf Bottom Trails by the numbers. It's 3.92 miles there and back from the parking lot. The time it took us was 2 hours and 36 minutes, but of that, only an hour and 30 minutes was actual moving time, and we're going to explain why there is so much not moving time later. The lowest point is 1,575 feet above sea level. The highest point is 1,950 feet above sea level, which is only a 375-foot elevation change. The friendliness from the midpoint where the schoolhouse is, and there is a parking lot there, so you can start there.
It's a small parking lot. So
it's a small parking lot.
It could be full, depending on when you go.
Right. From there up to the Walker Sisters homestead is not too bad. It's a service road, so it's mostly gravel. Not rocky or rooty. I don't think a wheelchair could get through it, but a hover around could probably get through it.
There's those log bridges. There's three log bridges that
that's
you have to...
That's before the parking lot area?
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah. But the beginning area is very rocky and rooty. There's no way you're getting a wheelchair or hover around. Like Donna said, there's a single cut log bridge, three of them, that you have to cross. So you're not getting a wheelchair through there.
Really kind of a skinny. I mean, like you want to put one foot in front of the other. Pretty much.
Yeah, and on the bridges, absolutely. Yeah, there's no way you're fitting two people there, absolutely. So as we said, the hike starts at the parking lot. And so if you're using Google Maps or Apple Maps, whatever your GPS is, you want to search for Metcalf Bottoms Picnic Area Road South, Gatlinburg, Tennessee. And the mountain that we actually are on is in Tennessee.
Yeah, it's real close to Cades Cove.
Very close to Cades Cove. So if you're on Newfound Gap Road, which is the main road that goes through the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, you're going to basically follow the signs to Cades Cove, and then there's a turnoff for Metcalf Bottoms parking area. And the parking area there is gorgeous because there's many picnic tables, and it's right there
next to
the Little Gorge River.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's absolutely beautiful there.
Decent bathrooms and... Yeah.
Oh, were the bathrooms nice? I saw them. I didn't go.
Yeah, the women's bathroom was, it was just two stalls, and so there was a mom with some little girls in one stall, and it was very cute. they had to take their time a little bit. So
there's tons of picnic tables there, though. I mean, there's probably 20 picnic tables.
And honestly, that parking area, I think that there's other parking areas off that parking area. If we had gone.
Oh, were there more?
Yeah, and I think there's more bathrooms, too. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty big.
It's big. Yeah, it's pretty big. And that river was moving yesterday.
Yes.
So it was beautiful.
You can drive over this wooden bridge, which...
It's a one-lane wooden bridge.
Yes.
And so it has both the cars and people have to walk over it, which is kind of sketchy.
You don't want to... Because you have to walk over that bridge to get to the beginning of the trail.
Right.
And so you're sharing that bridge with... cars, you only one car, like you said, only one car can go. So if you're heading one direction, sometimes you have to wait for people to come over that bridge before you can go over that bridge as a car. So it's a little, it's beautiful.
We decided to wait until the cars were gone to cross it on foot, just because it's very, very narrow. And, you know, people aren't always paying the closest attention. And I wasn't in the mood to get hit by a car on a bridge.
I wasn't either. We waited, but I was walking behind and trying to walk fast across that bridge, but a car didn't want to wait for me to get across. So he went ahead and started going, and it was, they gave me enough room. I didn't die. It was pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's good. I did see him or her, whoever the driver was, start to move as I was exiting.
As you were finishing. Yeah. Now it's halfway across
just
the bridge.
Wait a minute. She'll be done.
Yeah. But I mean, as a walker, I wasn't taking up that much room. So one car and person and a person walking across that bridge can fit.
It can, as long as the car person is paying attention. And there's so much to look at that it's hard to pay attention.
Well,
when
and that's
driving.
One of the reasons why I mean, I didn't stop and take a picture as I was, because you're taking a picture of this beautiful river.
Yeah.
So I don't actually know how that picture turned out, because I was walking as I was taking a picture.
It turned out good. I put a bunch of trail photos up today, guys, because this is a very picturesque trail. The trail, not as much as the stuff that's on it, but we did take a picture, several, of the river. And so you'll see that on episode 16 in the trail photos of the website, casualclimbers.podbean.com.
Are we already on episode 16?
Episode 16.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. That's crazy. So, Donna, what did you think about the hike itself? Ignoring the historical significant buildings, what did you think of the hike itself?
Well, you know me. I get excited about wildflowers, and there were patches of wildflowers on the sides of the path.
So many. Purple and blue and yellow and white.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so, I enjoyed that. And also, another one of my favorite things is to hike next to water.
Yeah, and much of this trail runs right along a little stream. It's not very big.
Right.
It's one of the smaller streams.
But it was pretty fast moving.
Yeah, yeah.
And there were some, what I thought were deep parts, and then you were like, oh, and you stuck your hiking pole in. It wasn't as deep as it looked.
But it was running for the most of the most of the trail. There was a stream, or probably more like a couple streams.
Yes.
Given the directions that we were moving. Yeah.
So I enjoyed that. The beauty of the stream, the beauty of the wildflowers. I had my thermocell, so the bugs weren't bothering me.
That thing works so well.
Yeah.
We reviewed it a couple episodes ago, guys. Man, does that thermocell work great.
Because you can hear them buzzing, but they're just not buzzing all up in my ear and landing on me.
Yeah, you can hear them, but I didn't feel a single gnat, a single fly, anything.
Yeah.
Or no mosquitoes, certainly, would get through that nice barrier, so... Thermocell, if you're listening, sponsor our podcast, because we're big fans. Yeah. Did you find the hike particularly challenging, the hike itself?
Well, we kind of went at a fast pace.
It was our fastest pace to date.
Yeah.
And that may speak to the difficulty level, too.
Right. Yes. If we could have moseyed, we could have taken our time more. But the fact that we were moving kind of fast, because we both love history and we both knew what was kind of at the end, like
at the middle and at the end.
At the middle and at the end. Yeah. Historic buildings.
So we might as well just tell them what it is. So from the parking lot, it's roughly 0.7 miles to the first historically significant area. And this is an old schoolhouse built in the 1870s. That is open. You can go in and look at it, and you can see the original benches and the original walls. And they still have interpretive demonstrations.
Only
there
on Tuesdays.
On Tuesdays.
We weren't there on a Tuesday.
No, we went on a Friday.
We'll have to go back on a Tuesday.
Yeah, we'll have to go back. And then right across from the schoolhouse is a cemetery that has some... It's actually a fairly large cemetery. There's probably, I don't know, what'd you say, 50? 50 to 60.
So I looked it up, and I wasn't going to say anything about this until the fun fact, but I'm going to go ahead and just give a little teaser. That cemetery, almost half of the bodies in that cemetery are children or babies.
We did see so many infant ones. That's awful.
Yeah.
I mean, so historically speaking, the infant mortality rate was really high back then, especially in the very challenging conditions of the mountains.
Sure.
And this is remote.
Yeah.
Like, this is in the middle of the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. They did not put a national park in city.
Right.
It's very remote mountains.
So people were not going to the hospital to have their babies.
No, No, so there's all midwife.
There's so much that can go wrong. I mean, there were children. So, you know, yeah, measles, chickenpox.
Sure. Snake bites. Yeah. I'm sure. Yeah.
Falling off of whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah. So anyway, that was.
So that's sad.
Yeah.
That's a little sad that there's some dating back to the 1800s. Some of the graves are dating back to the 1800s.
Yeah.
And the schoolhouse was built by John Walker, who we're going to get into in our fun fact. He helped build it. He didn't build it all by himself, obviously. And the schoolhouse doubled as a church, as most schoolhouses did back then.
Yeah, because it felt a little weird because this is a schoolhouse and there's a cemetery, a graveyard. And so until we thought about the fact that it doubled as a church, you're more used to seeing a cemetery next to a church rather than next to a schoolhouse.
Right.
So the fact that it doubled as a church made the cemetery, for me, make more sense.
Make a little bit more sense, sure. Yeah. It's really historically significant, and Donna's going to get into really great detail about it in her fun fact. But this whole area was called Little Greenbrier. It's called Little Greenbrier area back in the 1800s. And there's an old road where the second half of the trail from the schoolhouse up to the Walker's homestead, that is a 200-year-old wagon road, and probably much older than that. But they know for a fact, at least in the 1810s, 1820s, it was a wagon and horse road going up there. So it's very historically significant. And I got to tell you, when you and I were walking to it, it's hard not to. As you're walking the trails, it's hard not to remember the people who lived in that area and what they had to go through to this day. Because the Walker homestead is 1.1 miles from the schoolhouse.
Yeah.
So those kids walked that
every
day back and forth. And you and I walked it.
Yeah.
But we walked it as a very wide path.
Right.
That was graded and everything. It was meant for service vehicles. So it's fairly flat, you know, it's gravel. It was not the case when they were doing it.
Right. And they didn't have hiking boots.
They had the wooden-soled shoes probably.
And so they were walking this path in the winter on ice. Can you imagine?
Oh, man. No, I can't imagine. And it's really incredible. So when you're walking this trail, and like I said, you know, it's if you start from the very beginning at the parking area, it's still less than 4 miles total. So it's not a very long trail. It's not terribly challenging. There's some roots, some inclines, a few roots and rocks. But compared to the challenging ones that we've done, Rainbow Falls, Pinnacle Mountain Falls, this is nothing. This is barely a break of sweat, barely.
Now, I want to go ahead and say right out of the gate that dogs are not allowed, I believe, on this.
Dogs and bicycles are not allowed.
Dogs and bicycles are not allowed on this trail. So I'm sorry to those of you, friends of mine, that have dogs and enjoy hiking with their dogs.
Got to leave them at home for this one.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of sad to me. But, I mean, they have their reasons, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know what they would be.
Maybe they wouldn't want.
Messing with the wildlife, maybe.
Perhaps. Or marking the site of a 150-year-old school building.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. No kidding. Oh,
that's one thing, too. The schoolhouse. The fact that it has that little parking area right next to it, and you can drive up there and park there. You can get to it fairly easily. You can get to it in a vehicle.
Yeah.
If that parking area has parking spaces. The fact, I think, that it's fairly easy to even hike to. It has more graffiti, unfortunately.
I'm glad you brought that up, because you and I have very different views toward humanity. You are a much more optimistic person and really try to think of the best in people. My view is a little bit more pessimistic, and I generally see not the worst in people, but I don't expect a lot from people. So seeing graffiti carved into the walls of the schoolhouse, and now they do have a blackboard that looks like it's for people to write on. It looked like...
Yeah, it spanned the whole...
The whole front.
The whole front wall.
Yeah, yeah. So that doesn't bother me when people write on that blackboard, because it kind of looks like that's what that's for. But when they were carving, we saw so many
in the doorway.
Carvings in the doorways and on the, these 150-year-old school benches, people putting, you know, Jack loves Jill and stuff like that. It's just like, oh, I just, it really makes me
cringe
at people. Like, why do you think that's a good thing to do to deface something historically significant?
And they have a sign. So if you do park in that parking, the little parking area to walk up to the schoolhouse, they have a sign that talks about somebody. It talks about
Bob, I think it is. Yeah. It's this generic Bob guy that defaces.
Mm-hmm. And he got in trouble and he had to pay a fine. But he could have had jail time and it could have been $8,000 instead of $100, whatever it was. The sign is to deter people from doing that.
Clearly is not working as well as it should, well, I think.
We don't know when they put that sign up. Maybe it's working perfectly well. Maybe true. All of the graffiti happened before they put that sign up.
I don't know.
I have faith in people.
I know you do. I know you do. I have much less than you do.
Maybe people did that and they just didn't know that that was...
They didn't know it was a horrible not cool thing to carve on a 150-year-old hand-carved
Maybe
bench.
Maybe they didn't know that it was a 150-year-old hand-carved bench.
I don't know how they would not. It says it clearly on the signs going up, but
maybe they can't read.
Man, okay, see? Do you see what I mean, listeners? This is Donna trying her best. So, yeah. So, okay. So back to the trail. Once you leave the schoolhouse and you head up, mm-hmm. it's not very clearly marked. So how to get to the part going up to the Walker Homestead is if you're standing in the schoolhouse doorway, looking out, across the cemetery, there's a little road behind it that goes to the parking area. If you cross the road, there's a gated off service road that you can just, you know, you're supposed to walk around the gate entrance. It's just to prevent cars from going up there.
Right.
And then there's a little wooden trail marker that says Walker, mm-hmm. Walker Cabin, I think is what it says, that goes up.
Mm-hmm. I found it to be pretty well marked. What you're supposed to do, where you're supposed to go, but I
overall,
think
yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
I think it's good that you're mentioning that that's what you're supposed to do because
we struggled a little bit about it. When we got to the homestead and we spent a few minutes there and we looked at the cemetery, we went in the old schoolhouse and it was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, oh, where do we go now?
Yes,
because my trail map had it doing this weird dog leg, and now I can see why it had us doing this weird dog leg. You basically go around the cemetery. And then up the service road. And then once you get on that service road, it's wide. It's a wide service road meant for a vehicle. There's tire tracks, there's gravel. You can tell it's still actively used so that they can go up and
yes.
you know, do service to the cabin.
When the Walker sisters lived in that house, that was the road that was used to deliver them stuff.
Yes. Yes, it was. That was the wagon road that you walked.
Oh, they got in and out. And
right. whatnot. And so you walk up the trail, there's a stream that follows you almost the whole way. There's a couple parts where it's winded away from you, but for the most part, the stream follows you along the whole way. You even have to cross it at one point.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an area where the cars cross. It kind of goes down into this cemented area so that the water can still flow and without washing out the path. And there's also a little carved log bridge that you can walk across at that same area. And then you keep going up, and it's 1.1 miles from the, I guess you can say, from the schoolhouse cemetery area to the cabin. And then you get to the cabin, and you are smacked in the face with another 150-year-old yes. historical relic.
It's so beautiful.
It's incredible what they did there.
Yes.
So we're going to talk about the buildings and the homestead in much greater detail mm-hmm. and the fun fact. But there are three buildings still standing there.
Yes.
There is the corn house, which is where they stored their corn. And these are all wood that were hewn from trees there on the property. There's a spring house, which Donna's going to talk about. But basically, it is a wooden structure built on top of a spring that they used for refrigeration purposes.
Right, that was their refrigerator.
Yeah. And then there's the main house, which is... It's basically three rooms. There's the kitchen, there's the two-story main house, which is one room downstairs and one room upstairs, and then the front porch.
Yes.
And that so it's all attached into one. And those are the three buildings that are currently there.
Right. The kitchen house has a big hearth fireplace, big fireplace, and the main house has a big fireplace as well.
They were huge fireplaces. Yes. I was surprised at how big they were.
Yes.
Probably 6 feet wide, maybe even eight.
Yes.
Yeah, they were huge. And this house is not that big. 20 foot, the living area is 20 foot by 22 downstairs and 20 foot by 22 upstairs. And the kitchen's probably 16 by 18.
Yes.
So this is not a big spot. How many people live there?
So, I mean, I'm going to get further in.
Yeah.
In the fun fact, but John Walker and his wife had 11 children.
So at one point, at least 13 people were living there.
Yes.
That is insane when you think about how small that is.
Yes. And oh, by the way, I don't know if you knew this, but in my reading, the kitchen was the original house. The two-story that is attached to it is what was added.
Is that true?
That's true. And
that one's even smaller.
Yes. The kitchen is what was there.
Wow. I did not know that.
Yes.
That's incredible.
So the two-story was the addition, and the front porch was an addition as well. When they moved in, it was that kitchen room.
Wow.
Which they would not have considered it the kitchen. That was
their house.
Yeah.
That was their home. Yeah. That's nuts. And Donna's going to tell this amazing story about the Walker sisters. If you've never heard of them, they are these six sisters who never married.
No, one got married. They were five. Wait.
Six never married.
Yes.
One did.
Yes.
So okay, there were seven daughters total. Six never got
Sorry.
Married. They all six lived in the house together until they died. And so Donna's going to go into that. But their story is, it was covered by the Saturday Evening Post back in the 1940s. That's how interesting these women were. And Donna's going to give us a lot of tremendous detail on it. Yeah. But back to the trail overall. So that's the terminus. That's where the trail stops, and then you turn around and come back. So on the trail itself, Donna, would you recommend the trail just for hiking purposes?
Just for hiking purposes.
So if somebody had no interest in history, would you say this is a trail for them?
There's probably better trails.
I think so. The trail, in my opinion, was fairly unremarkable.
It's pretty enough. And like I said, we love history, so The stories around the land, for us, that's what made it magical.
That's why we drove 3 hours to get there.
Yes.
Is for that story, for the Walker sisters story.
So it's 3 hours from Greenville, South Carolina.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The trail itself, it's fine. It's not a bad trail.
No.
It's just unremarkable. So if you're just interested in the hiking, there's way better trails.
I imagine I think there were rhododendrons on the trail, maybe some mountain laurels, I imagine.
There was very few mountain laurels, but a lot of rhododendrons, yeah.
And so when those are in bloom, it would be a better trail. And probably in the fall, you know, anything in the Great Smoky
Mountains in the fall is pretty great. Yeah, but the trail as a hiker itself, unremarkable. But if you have any interest in history.
Yes.
This trail is, if you're going to the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, don't miss this trail just for the historical.
If you're going to the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, you're probably going to Cades Cove. So
yes, this is right there.
Yes.
Yeah. Like I said, you can spend 2 hours there. So spend 2 hours there and then spend another two or three at Cades Cove and you've got a very fulfilling day.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, great. So now let's dig into Donna's fun fact, because we've been dancing around it and teasing it for the past 24 minutes.
Okay. So, Roy, I don't know about you, but I grew up watching Little House on the Prairie.
My sisters did.
Yeah.
It was never my favorite show, but I know of it.
Okay. So, yes, me and my sisters, we really enjoyed watching Little House on the Prairie. Did you know that the Great Smoky Mountains had their own sort of Little House on the Prairie up into the 60s, the 1960s? There were these women that lived in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, the Walker sisters.
The Walker sisters.
Yes.
We saw a little glimpse into their life on the trail.
Yes. They lived in the family cabin their whole lives. The cabin was built in the early 1840s. They said that their 20 by 22 foot cabin was the only home they had ever known. It's near Kate's Cove. I think we mentioned that, yes. Mm-hmm. So when the Great Smoky Mountains National Park was becoming a national park, the government was coming through and buying up all of the private property to make that part of the national park.
Sure.
And so the Walker sisters were watching their neighbors selling their land and moving away. And the Walker sisters were like, no, I'm not about that life. Uh-huh. I'm staying. I'm going to stick around. I'm going to stay. They just dug their heels in and they did not want to move. And we hiked there and saw the beauty of the land.
I don't blame them.
Yes, I don't either.
Now, I know a little bit about this story just by helping you research.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fascinating from start to finish. So I'm looking forward to this. And listeners, I hope you're going to enjoy this as much as I am.
Now, keep in mind that this cabin has no electricity, no plumbing. The government probably thought it'd be easy to buy properties and convince people to relocate because, well, what are we talking about when it became a national park? Were we, it was the 40s?
Yep, early 40s. So here's what's interesting. It's 2024. There is no electricity, plumbing, or running water there still. Right. And they lived there until when?
1964, I believe. Was
64. Everybody had indoor plumbing, electricity, well, and
clearly
running water.
Not everybody. And you can't say everybody.
That's nuts. That is insane. The amount of resourcefulness
I'm sorry.
That these women had.
It was 1966. Well, that's the married sister. She died in 1966.
Okay.
So, but yes, they, the sisters that stayed, it was the sisters that were spinsters, the ones that never married. They were the ones that stayed. In fact, it's called, I think it was called Five Sisters.
Five Sisters Cove. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Because these sisters stuck around and they stayed.
So where did the story start?
Okay. So the story starts with John Walker. He was born on 3/3/1841. Now, I like that birthday because you were born on 4/4 and I was born on 5/5. So John Walker was born on 3/3.
So he's a kindred spirit.
Kindred spirit. But the year was 1841. So a little bit before us.
A couple years.
Yeah. He was the oldest of 15 children.
Good Lord.
Yes. Yes. Crazy, right?
Man, they were popping them out. Woman had to be tired.
Well, I think maybe the older children help with the younger children, but yes.
I mean, just...
Yeah.
15 kids, you were constantly pregnant.
So John Walker was, he was someone who voted, his he says that his first time that he voted for a president was voting for Abraham Lincoln. I don't know if that.
That's really interesting because you would think that in the South during that time, they would be pretty hardline conservative, but Lincoln was a very progressive candidate. So that's really interesting that he, and of course he was Republican at the time.
Right.
You know, that the parties have since flipped on their values, but that's interesting.
The Republicans used to be the more progressive.
Used to be the progressive ones. Yeah.
Yes. So he, when the Civil War was breaking out, he was 19 and he and a bunch of his friends. So Tennessee was really divided. He was not the only one that.
No, they call it the volunteer state for a reason.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
So he and his buddies went to go volunteer to be Union soldiers.
And I think a lot of people did that because the Confederacy was drafting people.
Yes.
So they were trying to avoid being drafted by the Confederacy and joining the Union Army. I mean, clearly he had sympathies with the Union, voting for Lincoln.
Yes.
So
I wonder how that was. There were so many.
There had to be neighbors that hated it.
Yes.
Yeah, I would think so.
I don't know if you openly talked about your politics back then. I mean, everybody had a shotgun, right?
Yeah. At least one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was probably talked about more than it is now. But back then, I don't think it was as identity driven as it is now.
Hmm.
So this isn't a politics podcast, so we'll skip that part.
Okay. All right. So he joined the Union and fought in one battle and was captured and sent to the Confederacy Andersonville prison.
That's awful.
After the battle.
The Andersonville prison is
the worst of the worst.
Famous for being
the worst.
The worst. Starvation.
Yes.
Was rampant.
Right. The Andersonville prison only existed for 14 months. Now, John Walker wasn't there for that whole 14 months, but just to give you an idea how bad it was, the Andersonville prison existed for 14 months. More than 45,000 Union soldiers were confined there. 13,000 died from disease, poor sanitation, malnutrition, overcrowding, or exposure to the elements.
So a third of the prisoners died in prison.
Yes, 13,000.
At this one place that was only open for a little over a year.
Yes.
That is awful.
Yes. Well, I mean, prisons back then, north or south, I'm guessing were pretty bad.
Yeah, but this one.
This was the worst of the worst.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So the prison was surrounded by huge pine logs, 15 to 17 feet in height. John Walker, I read something that said he was there for 100 days and lost 100 pounds. He must have been skin and bones because
it's not like he was a big guy anyway. Like when you look at the pictures of him as a younger person, he was not a big guy, maybe 190 pounds.
I mean, he probably had a lot of muscles and stuff like
that. I would think so, but
he's 20 years old, but
it's not like he was 300 pounds and he could afford to lose 100.
Yeah. So an old farmer that was an old, not Union, but Confederate.
Yeah.
An old
Andersonville's farmer. In Georgia, I believe.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So an old farmer felt sorry for the prisoners. So he threw pumpkins or bits of pumpkins over the fence. Supposedly, so I don't exactly know how this worked because there's one thing that I read that said that this sympathetic Southern farmer eased his hunger pains when he dumped a wagon load of pumpkins into the prison compound. I'm wondering, I don't know how you do that because I'm wondering if there were maybe just like he dumped it just outside of the logs and people could reach their arms through and grab bits of pumpkin.
Or they let the guy in to dump them. It's hard to say.
It's hard to say.
Yeah, I don't know. But either way, good on that guy.
Yeah.
He didn't want to see human suffering of his fellow countrymen.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. That was, I mean, that's humanity. That's what people are supposed to be like.
He would not carve on a 150-year-old house.
Right. He wouldn't. Yeah. You know, he was too busy trying to feed.
He was too busy trying to feed starving people.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
To deface public property. But anyway, that's how John Walker survived. He talked about this generous farmer and the pumpkins.
Can you imagine that? Surviving on pumpkins that were dumped.
Rind and seeds.
Oh, I'm sure he was eating every scrap of it, yeah.
I mean, him and however many others.
45,000 others. That's
minus the 13,000 that died.
God, that's so awful.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah, if you're allergic to pumpkins and that.
Oh, man, can you imagine? Just have this feast in front of you and you're allergic. I think I'd take my chances.
Yeah.
Honestly,
I'd take my chances. 100%. Yeah. So after the Civil War, he married or made good on his engagement to Mary Jane King Walker. She was born 7/18/1846.
Okay.
They got married on March 29th, 1866. And they had 11 children all over the years, all of whom lived to adulthood.
That is incredible.
Yes.
All of them lived to adulthood. That is unusual for that time period.
So in my research, it shows that they had 5 boys and 6 girls. Did you read
4 something? Boys. And 7 girls.
Because I have the names of all of them. And it's, okay, so here's the boys. James Thomas, William Wiley, John Henry, and Giles Daniel.
That's
4.
So,
yeah, that's 4. Okay, so here's the girls.
Yeah, it's definitely 4 and 7.
Okay, yeah. I don't know why that said the other. Yeah, Margaret Jane, Mary Elizabeth, Mary Ann, Nancy, Melinda, Louisa, Susan, and Sarah Caroline, and Hetty, Rebecca.
Hetty, yeah.
Hetty.
Hetty's, so there is a photo that I put on our trail photos page of Hetty. Hetty apparently was one of the fun ones, always laughing and giggling. She has crazy look to her. She has crazy hair. I bet she was a blast to be around.
I'll bet she was, yes. She was the youngest.
Oh, was she?
Yeah.
Okay.
She was born in 7/4/1889.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. Or the youngest girl, because
I think, yeah, Giles, they had a son who
Giles
was the
Daniel.
Young. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, they were a very fascinating family. The when John and Margaret had only four children, they moved into the house that his mother-in-law owned and lived in. So they moved in with his mother-in-law, with his wife's mother.
So they originally, they did not have that house there in Greenbrier Cove. They moved there after four of their children had been born.
Okay. Wiley King, Walker's father-in-law, died in 1859, and most of his children had moved away. So his widow continued to reside in the little Greenbrier, that little house, but was probably finding life more difficult as her children moved away. So she was probably...
She was older.
Yes.
She was 60s probably, or 70s, they, right?
It sounds like maybe they moved in to help take care of, kind of like you and I. Moved to this area to be
to help out your mom. Yeah. I think, you know, it was a win-win for both of them, right?
Yes.
Instead of having to build your own house, you take one that already is standing.
Albeit small.
But they probably did not anticipate having 11 kids when they moved there.
I mean, probably.
And then for the mother, you know, she had help.
Yes.
That she, I'm sure, desperately needed.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yes. Because that's a pretty big property.
Living in the mountains.
Yes.
By yourself as a 70-year-old lady. I mean, there were a lot of bears back then and mountain lions and wolves back then.
Yes. So
it could not have been easy.
Now, before it was a state park, you were allowed to hunt, which was a good thing for people who lived there, probably.
Oh, sure. They had elk and deer. Yeah, there was all kinds of food.
But you could also
kill. They also had elk and deer that would come after you. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Robin, oh, I'm sorry, not Robin. I was jumping ahead. So Margaret Jane, the mom, she was a skilled herb doctor. John Walker boasted that in his life, he had spent a total of 50 cents for the services of a medical doctor.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah.
So that's pretty good with the herbs.
I would think so, right? Like that's old school mountain healing right there.
Yeah, definitely. So she was also, in my imagination, someone you wouldn't want to mess with. So there's this story about her hearing a sound. She heard one of her hens making a great deal of noise, as if something was killing it. She went to the hen house. At first, she didn't see anything wrong, but soon she noticed that a weasel had the hen by the neck. The weasel was hidden beneath the hen. She grabbed the weasel, but it was able to bite her thumb and hold on so securely that she couldn't get it off.
Oh, man.
So listen to this. She calmly walked to the wash tub and thrust her hand, weasel and all, under the water.
She is drowning the weasel?
While it's biting her thumb.
This woman is very hard.
She's hard.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
If I was her kid and I saw that happening, I'd be like, I would do my chores. I would go to bed on time.
Without question.
I would clean my plate.
Yeah.
I would...
There's no sass and mama after that.
Yeah, so.
She did it all calmly.
Calmly, yeah.
So this was like, she's like, okay.
All right,
weasel.
All right.
I didn't realize we were doing this today, but one of us is going to die here.
You want to play?
Let's play.
Bring it.
That's crazy.
It drowned in the waters stained by Margaret Jane's blood. She commented that she knew, quote unquote, sooner or later it would turn loose.
That is a bad woman right there.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
And then I'm sure she went and picked some herbs and put them on her thumb.
They probably had weasel stew that night. Oh, man, that's amazing.
Yeah, I love that story. So that's just
laying the foundation for these six sisters.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's just one of the stories.
So this is a hardy woman family right here.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, mountain women. Yes.
This is a feminist story start to finish.
Yes.
That's good. Good for them.
Yeah. So, yeah, there is so much research that you can do. I found out that after the Park Service was making it a national park.
Yeah.
And at this point, you know, we're fast forwarding. There's the five sisters that are alive when, you know, and the Spencers, they're just single older ladies and the park is becoming a park and they don't want to move. And so it went back and forth a bit because they were like, one of the last holdouts of people who owned their own place and lived in that park. Finally, after a lot of back and forth, it was agreed upon that the government would pay them you looked at, was it $4,600, I think it was?
Something like that. $4,750, like I think is what it was.
And they could live out the rest of their lives on the property.
You know, backing up a little bit. So the father died early 1900s, 1909, I think it was.
He died in 1921.
1921. The father did.
Yes.
Okay. And he bequeathed it to his children, mostly his daughters.
The daughters that were living there.
Right. Yeah. And so these women, these six sisters, lived on this property their entire lives.
Yes.
By themselves, none of them ever got married. So tell me the story about why they never got married.
So the one sister that did get married, it's kind of a really good thing that she did get married, because her husband was into photography, and her husband was the one that was taking these old family pictures.
Oh, so all those early 1900, late 1800s, that's amazing.
Yes. The one sister that got married a photographer. Go figure. That's pretty great.
Yeah.
Because we wouldn't have all of this history.
Yeah.
You know, historical photos. But yeah, the sisters that didn't get married. So the oldest one, Margaret Jane. Now, she was named after her mother, Margaret Jane. Now, so Margaret Jane, the mom, was born in 1846, died in 1909. Margaret Jane, the daughter, the oldest daughter, was born in 1870 and lived to 1962. She was the practical religious one. She sang hymns and quoted scriptures, but very early on, at a young age, she decided that she had no use for men and was not going to date or get married, and that was the case.
There's got to be a story there, right? There's got to be a story there. I'm not saying that, you know, men are the greatest. I'm just saying during that time frame, it was very unusual for a woman not to get married.
Yes.
Early.
Even if it was just an arrangement of, okay, you work in the field and I work in the house, there was lots and lots of work to be done, and men's muscles perhaps are better equipped for...
At the very least, it's another set of hands to help, right? Because these women had, over the years, they developed massive apple, peach, pear, cherry tree orchards.
Well, that was their father. Their father had, I think...
Well, he started it.
Yes.
But they developed the acres of orchards, in addition to gardens, vegetable gardens.
Herb garden.
A tremendous herb garden. Apparently, their herb garden was like renowned in the area for having anything that you could ever want.
Creme de la creme of herb gardens.
Of herbs. And then flowers. I think one report said they had over 100 varieties of flowers growing
flowers
on their property.
And they could cultivate them. And they could
give
them
corn. So, and potatoes and everything else. I mean, these women were entirely self-sufficient, except for a few things, right?
I think it was salt,
coffee.
Yes.
And a couple other things. Not very much.
Not much.
It was mostly salt and coffee were the two big ones.
Yeah, I read that one time that they made shoelaces from squirrel hides. And they had a cotton gin, and their dad made a cotton gin. And
John Walker Sr. designed and built this little handheld cotton gin.
Yeah.
And that's another thing. These women had cows, goats, sheep, and an old mule. And they were doing this all on their own. And let me tell you, listeners, the mountains, it's pretty high up there. This is close to Chimney Tops. The winters get extremely cold.
Oh, yeah. There's a picture of that cabin with snow all around.
Yeah. This is not an easy life. And they had a much harder life than anybody else of that time.
Right.
In the city, for sure.
In fact, they were educated. They were all considered to be above average intelligence, but they only went to school for...
till the sixth grade.
Well, not only that, but in a year's time, they maybe only went to school 3 months because they had so much work.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
On the farm.
Yeah. So it's not like they're going to school as much August through April or May like they do now. They were going a couple days, you know, maybe one or two days a week, or maybe just a couple months out of a year.
A section of time that they didn't have the farm, you know,
probably winter, I would think,
probably,
right? When they're not working in the fields.
You have those slick bottom shoes and the ice that you have to walk on.
It's insane. And so
there's no yak tracks. There's no hiking poles.
No, no,
I mean,
there's not.
There probably are walking sticks, but.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you grab a stick. Yeah, sure. So the oldest sister was like, I never need a man. I'm fine.
But she did recruit her sisters.
Yeah, one of the stories said that
she,
through ridicule and persuasion,
yes,
she convinced her other sisters to not get married. But two of them were engaged.
Yes, two that did not end up getting married. So one got married, and two of the ones that ended up being spinsters were engaged to be married, and there were two separate logging accidents that killed their fiancés.
Man.
Yeah.
So they had 11 children, which is unusual. They had 11 children that lived to adulthood.
Which is another unusual.
Which is even more unusual.
Right.
And then you had seven daughters, six of which never got married, even further unusual.
Right.
And then those six sisters lived on this property and worked the land.
Yes.
Harder than anything that we could possibly imagine today to make it even more unusual. So you can see why there have been books and documentaries about these six women. They are remarkable women.
In 1946, the Saturday Evening Post did interview them.
Yeah, they did it was a cover story, I think, for them. How incredible. Yeah,
because at that time, if you wanted, now, Little House on the Prairie was not airing on TV. I wonder if somebody visited or knew about the Walker sisters and said, you know what would be a great idea for a show?
You see what these women are doing? But even on Little House on the Prairie, they had Pa Ingalls, and then Albert was there. So they had some male help.
Yes.
There. But
which these girls had when they were young.
Yeah, and so from the parts that I was reading, they would ask for help when they needed it from neighbors or something
like
that.
I'm thinking that their brothers probably came.
Well, one of the brothers served in World War I.
Yes.
And another brother moved to Idaho. So they kind of spread out, but I don't want to discount in any way, shape, or form
the day in, day out
challenges that these women overcame. And so one of my favorite stories from what we were reading was that these women, so they grew all their own food, literally everything.
Yes.
They hunted, they butchered their own hogs, they cleaned their own hogs, they everything that you need for daily life, they did. They made their own clothes. Nuts. Yes. Anybody that would come over, they would feed them.
Yes.
Anybody, the mailman.
Yes.
If he brought the mail inside instead of dropping it off, you know, close by, he would get fried apple cakes.
Yes.
That is...
If you were their mailman.
Right.
You bring their mail to them. Now, this is when they were elderly ladies, because what happened was there was a sort of a shift. When it became a national park, they could no longer shoot, hunt, kill animals, that kind of thing.
Right.
They could no longer... I read that you could no longer chop wood, but I don't know if there was some kind of...
I think that they probably got a pass on that. Yeah.
Yeah, because they had wood-burning fireplaces. Yeah. They needed that for heat.
For life.
Yes.
For food and heat. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. For food. Yeah, because they cooked on their fireplace.
Right.
Amazing meals from what I read.
Yeah. So some of the stories in these books that we were reading talk about how people would come from miles around for their Christmas meals. These ladies would start cooking weeks in advance.
Well, they had two fireplaces to cook on.
And make these incredible spreads that people would just come from miles around and were lining up out the door to get some of this food. And these women were always gracious and...
Yes.
And they loved people. They did. And so when the park was, I guess, commissioned, when it was unveiled, when it was official, these women were allowed to stay on there until they died.
Right. They're spinsters, they're not married, they're not having babies. It's not like, you know, and they were already older, elderly.
Right, at least in their midlife at the time that the, you know, 40s and 50s by the time the park became a park.
Right.
And so slowly, over the next few years, people started coming to the park, started hearing about these Walker sisters and showing up. And they would always greet them.
Yes.
And they would always feed people.
They started making corn cob dolls and baskets to sell, little tiny baskets to sell to the visitors. And of course, the apple cakes.
The stack cakes. Yeah, we had to look that up, what a stack cake is. So a stack cake is basically, it's not exactly a pancake. It's this cake that's made with flour and, flour molasses. Was another thing that they had to get. And molasses. And then it's layered with apple filling in between each stack, and it's cooked in a cast iron skillet. I can't imagine. It's got to be amazing. So we're going to have to find a stack cake somewhere.
I mean.
But can you imagine in the 1950s, heck, even in the 1960s, when at least two of these women were still alive on the property, can you imagine driving your car from your house that had electricity and television and all that stuff to this place where these two old women were still living?
Yeah.
With none of that.
So it's interesting that
they were being gracious to you.
Right. Right. So there's this woman named Robin Goddard. She's a retired fifth and sixth grade teacher. This lady tells stories of when she was a young girl. She was just 4 years old. So she had a neighbor. This neighbor's name was Elsie.
Okay.
And I couldn't confirm it, but I think maybe Elsie knew the Walker sisters somehow. I'm wondering if she was one of the neighbors, one of the lifelong friends and neighbors that had lived up there and moved away. Well, the neighbor, Elsie, would take this little four-year-old girl, Robin, up to the Walker sisters' cabin, and they would spend 6 to 8 weeks with the Walker sisters each year. Little Robin, when she was young, she would sleep on a trundle bed in their cabin, and Elsie would help with harvesting and planting, and Robin's father entrusted Elsie to keep Robin out of trouble during those visits. That would take a leap of faith to send my four-year-old little girl for 6 to 8 weeks to that cabin.
So she stayed there? She lived there for 6 to 8 weeks?
Every year for several years. So she knew these ladies.
Very, very well.
Yes. Yeah. She kind of grew up with it. So let's see. Robin was born in August of 1953. So she's currently 69 years old. So
she was there. She was alive for at least 10 years before the last one passed away.
Yeah.
So if she was four, this would be 57. So I think there was two, maybe three. I think there might've been three sisters at that point.
Yeah. So there's a video where we found it on YouTube, or I found it on YouTube. Yeah. It was a Channel 10 news video. They did these different, letting you know about this story, because it's an amazing story.
Yeah.
So Robin Goddard, she still volunteers there. She goes to the little Greenbrier School that was built in 1882.
The school that we went to that's on this trail.
Yes. Robin volunteers at that schoolhouse. She's there every Tuesday from 8:30 to 6 p.m. to answer questions. And she does a presentation every Tuesday at 11 a.m. and 2 p.m., I hope she's... Now, this that I'm getting this information from was done 4 years ago. I'm hoping that she's still doing that.
Yeah, I couldn't find anything about her still doing it, but I hope so.
Yes.
Because I saw the video. I watched the video with you.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. She has a lot of insight about these women because she knew them personally. Yeah.
Yes, she has her favorite sister and all that. So she adjusts her presentation like I said, hopefully she's still doing it, but she when she was doing it, she adjusts that presentation depending on who's in the audience and what they're interested in learning about. So love that. Yes. She dresses like an authentic teacher from back in the day. She rings the school bell and she shares lessons about life during that era. She even has a spelling bee that people can participate in. So yeah, she's been volunteering there for 44 years. She's been doing presentations since the early 1990s.
That's wonderful. And I hope she keeps it up. And that's really amazing. You know, when we were looking into this, so the whole impetus for this trail came about by you stumbling across their story.
Yes.
And then we were like, oh, there's a trail that goes up there. We're going to get, we're going to kill two birds with one stone here.
Yep.
And
didn't actually kill any birds though. It's a national park.
No birds died in the making of this podcast.
Right.
But when we started getting into it, I was not prepared for how truly remarkable these women were.
Yes.
I don't think it can be overstated how difficult of a life
that
being completely self-sustaining, self-sufficient on a mountain without any modern conveniences, not a single one.
Well, okay, so...
And they were women doing this well into their 60s and 70s.
Right. Now, they did have... a Sears Roebuck catalog that they would order hats from. They were into hats.
They loved their hats. I saw that. So now, when we say that they didn't have money, we mean they didn't have money.
Right.
They
one of the things they said was make do or do without.
Yeah.
Make do or do without.
So they sold what little surplus they had of chestnuts and apples and then
they made one of them wrote poetry.
Louisa wrote poetry.
Yes.
And so at the end of this fun fact, I'd like to read one of her poems.
Oh, I love that.
Because one of them is really interesting. It gives you some insight into why they stayed, even though the Park Service was
there's going. Value, right? There's value in, can you imagine a life where you don't have an electric bill, you don't have a water bill, you don't have anybody tell, well, they had the Park Service telling them that they couldn't shoot animals, but.
yeah. But even before the Park Service, right?
Right.
Knoxville was a good sized city.
Right.
In the 1920s and 30s. And I think a couple of the sisters actually worked in a hosiery factory or textiles for brief periods of time there. So it's not like they didn't know about it.
Right.
They were very well aware of electricity, of running water, of indoor plumbing, of vehicles,
they
and
would go
chose
to,
not
yeah.
to use them.
Yes. And they did a train ride to go to some church event or something somewhere.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So they were aware.
They knew.
They chose that life.
100% choice from each of them.
Right.
Now, I saw some things online where it said the older sister kind of bullied them into it, but I don't think she's going to bully five other women.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen. She's not going to bully five other women. She might be able to bully one or two, but not all of them.
They had to also want it. You can't, I mean.
Of course they did.
Now, one of them whose fiance died in a logging accident, she had some.
That was Polly.
Yes. She had some mental issues.
Polly's fiance, Cooter, which was the only name given to him, Cooter, died in a logging accident, which apparently was pretty common back then because two of the sisters had fiancés in unrelated logging accident deaths. She was so grief-stricken, apparently, that she walked around for a while and got sick.
Yes.
And that sickness affected her mental health. Probably she got some kind of brain infection that went untreated. What did they call her in one of the stories, unstable for the rest of her life.
Yeah, she...
But productive still. It's not like she was a vegetable.
I mean, honestly, going out and working in a field or picking apples or whatever, that's probably a really great thing for somebody who has mental problems.
Probably, right?
You're getting exercise. You're out in, you know, there's a blue sky. There's birds chirping.
There's nothing complex there to deal with, right? You have a task in front of you. You do the task.
Right. Yeah. Unless there were murder hornets or anything like that. But I don't know if that they were.
I don't think they got very shaken up about anything in those mountains.
Yeah.
Because black bears were very common back then.
That's true.
Very, very common.
So Polly, the one we're talking about, she was born in 1875 and she died in 1945. So what is that?
60 years.
Yeah.
That's still a very long life. Yeah. All of these women died fairly late in life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you compare it to the average mountain lifespan.
Yeah.
Back then.
Now, Martha Ann, she's the next one. She was born in 1877 and she died in 1951. She was the family accountant and she was the one who was in charge of the catalog orders for the hats and stuff.
So. That's pretty great.
Yeah.
That one of the books that we got it at the Visitor Center there at the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. There's a book about the Walker sisters and that's where I'm going to read the poem from. It shows their hats that they recovered, and the National Park Service retrieved
over 4,000 items from the sisters
artifacts are
preserved in a temperature-controlled archives building in Townsend. I hope that they sometime do maybe like an art exhibit of these artifacts.
Oh, God, I would love to see that.
That would be amazing.
Yeah. Because the Father Walker built a lot of inventions that helped them. So those would be interesting just to see anyway.
Yes.
And they made their clothes. That is so nuts. In the book, it talks about.
And they were good at making their clothes.
Yes. They spun their own wool and made their own linen.
And their cotton gin.
That is crazy.
Now,
the
one thing that I read was that to make their summer clothes, they did go in. That was store-bought material because you needed the
lighter.
Yes, lighter material. Yeah. The wool and everything would be too heavy for summer, I think.
But still, they just bought fabric
yes.
and made their own
and
clothes.
Made their, yeah.
Yeah. That's simply incredible. these Walker sisters story, the more it was one of those things where you got sucked down a rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm.
So the more you read about their incredible life, the more you were like, oh, I want to find out more and more and more and more.
Yeah. Yeah. The video series, The Walker Sisters, was done by WBIR Channel 10. They did 3 videos.
Oh, nice.
About 4 years ago. And they also interviewed a woman named Valerie Polk, a videographer for the nonprofit Great Smoky Mountains Association. Her great-grandmother is the one Walker sister who got married, Carolyn Walker Shelton. And Jim Shelton was her husband, and he developed some of the best early photographs of the Walker family.
So, listeners, go online and search Walker sisters. It'll be the first thing that comes up.
Yeah.
There's tons of pictures of them. If you look at, you can see their buildings and their homestead there. Today, if you look at the pictures on our website, there's nothing on the porch. There's nothing in the house. But if you look at the pictures from back then, every inch of their porch, every inch of their house is covered with a tool or something that they would be using every single day.
Churning butter.
Everything. It's insane. And the Saturday Evening Post photos are really striking.
Yes.
They are very good because they're in color, which was very unusual for the time. And you get a glimpse into the life. Just what I always find interesting looking at these old pictures is looking in the backgrounds, because you get a good idea. There's a loom on the front porch that they use to weave their fabrics. There's one of the pictures has a lady making butter. You know, it's just incredible what these women accomplished. And like we said before, they chose it.
Yep.
They could have sold their land for a good amount of money and lived in the city in an apartment fine for the rest of their life.
Or old folks. I don't know if they had. But so in the 1930s, the commission responsible for buying land from the Great Smoky Mountains unsuccessfully attempted to persuade the Walker sisters to sell the homestead. They were fearing bad publicity, kicking all these.
Can you imagine?
I cannot.
Can you imagine if it came out that the government was kicking 5 old ladies or 6 at the time, old ladies off land?
They were loved by the people. They loved people and they were loved by people.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the commission balked at forcing the Walkers out via condemnation suits. The Walker sisters finally sold the farm in 1941 in exchange for a lifetime lease. A local legend claims that the sisters were paid a visit by President Franklin Roosevelt, who convinced them to sell the land. Roosevelt was in the area at the time to dedicate the national park in 1940, but there is no known record of a visit to the Walker place. I like to imagine that Franklin Roosevelt came to these sisters and had a sit down. You know what? Sell us your land. We will let you live here until you just live out your days.
Yeah, I bet he did. I bet he did. I know there's no record of it. There wouldn't be, because that would mean a president would be coercing somebody into doing something.
I don't know if
That's what it would be perceived as.
Sure.
But I 100% think they would, because they were famous and probably one of the only holdouts. And once you hear this story, wait a minute, there's 6 ladies living on land without any modern amenities whatsoever. How do you not check this out? We drove 3 hours just to check out this abandoned homestead.
And I'll bet Franklin Roosevelt got some apple cake or stack cake.
Oh, you know they fed him. They might have been grouchy at him about wanting to sell, but you know they fed him.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like they were really grouchy necessarily. They were well-loved, sweet, sweet ladies that just were hard workers.
Hard workers.
Toward the end of the last two, when there was only 2 left, they asked the Park Service to take down the sign that said welcome visitors, just because they couldn't get all their chores done and entertain guests, but people still came up there and they still fed them.
That's crazy. So the ladies did ask, hey, can you take down the welcome visitor sign and put up a no trespassing sign? And if you look online, you can see the photo of it.
Right. People didn't stop coming.
It didn't stop anybody.
Because people.
Yeah. And because people being people. And these women who didn't want them there.
Because they were old and tired and couldn't get things done. Yeah. And
still accepted them as guests and fed them.
Yep.
I mean, that speaks to their character.
Exactly. Right? Yeah.
These are just good people.
Right.
Right? Who didn't need no mans, Donna?
I kind of wonder if Franklin Roosevelt was like, after meeting them, was like, okay, you know what? I can see the problem here. I can see how, you know, we're not kicking these ladies
off our land.
Have you tasted their apple cake?
Yeah, I know. I'm afraid I'm going to get drowned by one of them, quite honestly. So here's a poem, Donna, from Louisa, titled My Mountain Home. There's an old weather Bedouin home that stands near a wood, with an orchard nearby it. For almost 100 years it has stood. It was my home in infancy. It sheltered me in youth. When I tell you I love it, I tell you the truth. For years it has sheltered, by day and night, from the summer's sun heat and the cold winter blight. But now the park commissioner comes all dressed up so gay, saying this old house of yours we must now take away. They coax, they wheedle, they fret, they bark, saying we have to have this place for a national park. For us old poor mountain people, they don't have a care, but must a home for the wolf, the lion, and the bear. But many of us have a title that is sure and will hold to the city of peace, where the streets are pure gold. There no lion in its fury those paths ever trod. It is the home of the soul in the presence of God. When we reach the portals of glory so fair, the wolf cannot enter, neither the lion or bear. And no park commissioner will ever dare to disturb or molest or take our home from us there. That's from Louisa Walker. You can feel how much she loves her home.
Yeah. And how much they worried and fretted and suffered from the worry that they were going to be taken from their home.
Their entire life would be taken from them.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great fun fact, Donna. I encourage all the listeners to check out the videos on YouTube about the Walker sisters. Pick up the book about the Walker sisters. The one we picked up is called The Walker Sisters of Little Greenbrier by Rose Houck. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it at the Park Service. It's a small book. It took us, what, maybe an hour to read? It's real small, but it gives you a lot of good insight to it.
Yes.
And check out the Walker sisters. Their story is inspiring. It's fascinating.
It is. I am so glad that the Great Smoky Mountains is a national park. I'm so glad that we have that. That is a true national treasure of a park. But this story of the Walker sisters, it's one where I am pro national park. I am also pro Walker sisters. That to see their sheer will and determination to stay and, I don't know.
It does make you wonder, if the national park didn't take over, would their homestead still be there? Or would it some logging company or something else have come in, a mining company, and just leveled it all, and we wouldn't have any homestead or school to go to? It's hard to say.
That's a fair point.
It's hard to say.
Yes.
So, yeah. Thanks, Donna. Thanks for researching that. I know that this was a tough one. You weren't feeling well yesterday, so you powered through.
I never thought I was going to be ready to record this podcast because there's so much information.
It's
one of those things where, oh, but this and this and this and this and this needs to go in, and you just can't get it all.
No, you have to cut it off at some point. Yeah. And get people. So the Walker sisters, if you're out there up wherever, depending on your belief system, you know, good on you.
Yeah.
That's impressive. You got a couple fans here.
And there's a lot of Walker relatives, great nieces and nephews, and there's a lot of people that I would be so proud if they were in my family.
Oh, without question.
Fine.
Incredibly strong women, every single one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So today's review, Donna, is a little different than our normal reviews. Normally, we talk about hiking equipment or neat businesses in the area. Today, we're going to talk about an app called Guide Along. Now, we first discovered Guide Along when you and I drove the Blue Ridge Parkway last year in the fall.
Oh, yes. I love that.
Guide Along is an app in the Android and Apple stores. The app is free, but the tours cost money. And so what it does is it provides you a GPS-triggered narrated tour of, I think they have almost 100 tours in the Guide Along app that you can do all over the world. And basically what it is it gives you interesting information about a specific park or region or city or whatever that is triggered by GPS. So when we were driving down the Blue Ridge Parkway, when the app was running, as you're driving, when you hit a spot, it would trigger this narration that would tell you a story or tell you something interesting about it and give you tips on, hey, this is a great store to stop at. Here's, you know, this next exit has great food if you want to stop. There's hikes coming up here. Let me tell you about the history. I fell in love with this app on the Blue Ridge Parkway drive. It is a wealth of information. And the Great Smoky Mountains National Park tour is just as fascinating.
Yes. And I like that the narrator will also tell you when he's like, this is just a so-so hike. You can pass this one on by. Or if you feel like getting out and stretching your legs, then you could do that. But there's better stuff. You know, he would tell you what was good and what was meh, you know?
Right. Because like, if you're going through the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, this is massive. This is a huge national park.
Yes. Yes.
So you can easily get overwhelmed by the things to do and spend 2 weeks there and still not cover everything.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So the guide does kind of help you. He's like, you know, I'm going to give you some of the better ones. And when we were on the Blue Ridge Parkway, his recommendations were spot on.
Yes.
When he said this is a don't miss overlook, it was a don't miss overlook.
That's true. Now, the disclaimer or caveat or whatever, that first hike that we did on the Blue Ridge Parkway, he said that was an easy. So he's going by what it's rated by probably seasoned hikers.
Probably. Yeah. So, that hike kicked our butt.
Yes.
It was not as easy as he said it was.
Not in even the same neighborhood.
Right. So the Guide Along Trail for Great Smoky Mountains tour is $15. And it's, in my opinion, worth every penny. And once you have it forever. And they will update it regularly. Like, I had an update to it.
Mm-hmm. That's very cool.
Yeah, I had an update to it right before we went on this trip.
Yeah, because you would have some maybe construction that would be started, be in the middle and then finish.
A new trail that opens.
Yes.
Right.
Trees down and this trail is closed.
Right.
That kind of thing. He gives you plenty of warning before you have to turn. This is the turnoff for blah blah blah. You know, I felt like it was.
Yeah, you'd have to try to miss it.
Yes.
And when he's telling you where to go, you'd have to really try to miss
now,
it.
Now, I will say that there was this one point that I missed a story and I wanted to go back and hear it. But if you're driving along, it will, when you get to certain points, the GPS will trigger the next story because you're at that next point. So
you almost have to stop.
Yes.
And then replay it and then go on. Yeah.
Yeah. So that being said, if you drive really fast and you're trying to listen to this, you might get stories cut off from one story to the next.
Sure. I hope you're not speeding through the Great Smoky Mountains National Park because it's 35 miles an hour through most of it.
Yes.
Some of it's 45, but most of it's 35.
You're supposed to enjoy it.
And man, just the drive through is so wonderful. And hearing his stories about the Cherokee and about how the Smoky Mountains National Park was founded and how its genesis and the people that helped bring this park to life.
Yes.
Is fascinating. It was wonderful. So I use Guide Along on the Blue Ridge Parkway and Great Smoky Mountains. And honestly, I'm going to start looking for other tours that they have because it's well worth it, in my opinion.
Yes.
So it's guidealong.com is their website. You can look at it in the Android or App Store. Guide Along, all one word, GUIDEALONG. I recommend it, Donna. Don't you?
Oh, yes.
So that's the episode today, guys. Metcalf Bottom's trail leading up to the Walker Sisters homestead and the schoolhouse, Little Greenbrier Schoolhouse. The trail itself, fairly unremarkable, but the historical significance cannot be overstated.
Yes.
It's absolutely incredible to go visit this place where these really incredible women lived their entire lives. Every second of their lives, they were there. And that's so incredible. We also talked about Guide Along, my app that I really enjoy that gives you, that makes your trip to the Great Smoky Mountains National Park even more special. Because I learned things, Donna, that I certainly didn't know, and you wouldn't know.
Yeah.
If you didn't really dive into the
history
of it. It's
a really great app. I mean, you'd be driving that beautiful road and saying, I wonder this, I wonder that. And he's telling you.
Yeah.
Wheelchair accessible things and all just.
Yeah. Here's an easy path that's super simple to walk. Here's a wheelchair accessible trail. You know, here's a part about this ancient Cherokee trading route. And it's great. So Guide Along on the Android and Apple Play Store. And then, of course, your fun fact about the Walker sisters. It's a supersized fun fact, and I loved every second of it. So thank you for that, Donna. And thank you guys for listening.
Yes. And really, truly, thank you so much for listening. Please subscribe to us in whatever podcast app you use, and be sure to leave us a review. That's how our show grows. Feel free to check out our trail photos at casualclimbers.podbean.com. And if you have a question, comment, or just want to drop us a line, you can reach us at casualclimberspodcast@gmail.com. We will see you out on the trail.
Before we see him on the trails, Donna, I don't think I have the strength that those Walker sisters had. I don't think I would have been able to do what they did for as long as they did with as little as they had to work with.
You know what? They were some of the original tiny house people.
Yeah, absolutely they were. So here's my thought. I think maybe you should get out back and start planting cherry tree orchard and apple orchard, some herb gardens. I mean, if these women could do it, there's nothing stopping you.
Nothing except that I don't have that. You going to buy me a tree to plant?
They didn't buy trees to plant.
Okay.
They grew from seed, Donna.
Okay. All right. Fine. You got the seeds? Do you know what to do with the seeds?
You're asking me. I'm not a Walker sister.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And you're a woman, so you're as close as we get. So I'm going to expect this next week to see you out there. Also, one of my shoelaces broke this week. We got a ton of squirrels in the neighborhood. Can you make that work?
I'm just going to buy you shoelaces.
We'll see you out on the trails.